We have a passel of sayings about humans that cross over into the world of horses, you know, eats like a horse or has horse sense or acts like a horse's. You can use your imagination there. Our guest this hour trains horses and has long noticed some of the similarities in working with horses and humans. Things like gentleness, firmness, and respect can pay big dividends in getting results from the creature you're working with. Grant Gallagher writes of his theories and his work in Think Like a Horse, Lessons in Life, Leadership, and Empathy from an Unconventional Cowboy. Grant Gallagher is indeed a longtime horse whisperer, public speaker, and the co-owner of Diamond Cross Ranch near Jackson Hole, Wyoming. He's written another book, a memoir called Chasing a Dream. Grant Gallagher, welcome to The Exchange.
Good to be with you, Jeffrey. Thanks for having me.
It is a pleasure. Even before I cracked your book, I was thinking from the descriptions of it that this sounded like all I need to know I learned in kindergarten. And in fact, you do make the same claim with a horse.
Yeah. I think that's part of our foundation. What we grow up with is who we become, just like the horse does.
So talk about your experience with horses. I mean, how early in life did you start breaking, as the term was used at the time, animals on the family farm?
Yeah, I grew up in western Colorado, really on a little peach farm. But my dad, he raised mules, so we had horses and mules, and my job was to break all the mules. And he really, you know, did things what I call the old way. It was just all about force, fear, intimidation, repetition, make them do it, pound it into them. And, of course, he threw me on those young colts as a boy, not really giving me any instruction, just get on and stay on. And I had all kinds of wrecks. I got bucked off and raked off on the peach trees and air knocked out of me and crying. And so I kind of grew up with them. But the old way, I'd say, of training horses and mules. But it never felt good to me. I didn't like that feeling of a fearful animal underneath me that was totally out of control. And, you know, so I grew up just spending a lot of time with the young mules and got to be their friends and learned to get along with them rather than have the battle of breaking them.
How long did you stick with the breaking method, the I'm the boss method, and what was it that finally got you to change?
Well, as a young boy riding them, because I spent so much time riding, I just learned to get along with them. And so I had a way, I think, back then, whether you call it a gift or just experience or maybe just survival, but I really enjoyed the mules. It wasn't until I, you know, went into professional horse training that I got around other trainers that were using just the old way, you know, of forcing the horse, restraining the horse against his will, and fighting with the horse. We called it bronc fighting and bonk busting. And it really brought up a lot of adrenaline, and it was very exciting, but it was really not the best thing for the horse. But we didn't know that. It's just what we grew up with. Until I came across a man named Ray Hunt who showed a better way. And I just couldn't believe that he could do what he could get done with a horse compared to kind of the ways that I had grown up with.
You acknowledge and thank Ray Hunt frequently in your book. Where did he learn all of his techniques?
Well, I think he just grew up, a cowboy working on ranches and such and was known as a very good horseman. But again, he didn't, at least from his words, he didn't really come across this until he met his friend Tom Dorrance. And Tom, really from Northern California, was from Oregon. He was the one that, really raised credit to have learned some of these things from, because Ray ran into a horse he couldn't train. He just kept bucking with him. His name was Hondu. And that horse really was the reason Ray started looking for answers. And like many of us do, when we get frustrated, with something we can't deal with, we start looking for answers. He found an answer with Tom Dorrance. It's raining here on me. I hope you heard. Can you hear that?
No, actually, I can't. No. Congratulations.
Okay, great. Yeah, we're glad to have the rain. So Tom was a huge influence on many, you know, people kind of my age. I'm in my 60s, and as was Ray. And I was fortunate to be around Tom quite a bit, and with another good friend of his named Kinky Lordi from Oregon, by the way. So it's really, you know, what I've learned from different guys, plus a lifetime of working with horses, you know, on a full-time basis. And so that's why I wrote this book, really, Think Like a Horse, because it really brings out the principles and really the philosophy of how working with horses really fits life. And that's what Tom used to say. He said it really fits life if you think about it.
Well, and I notice it's a two-way education. I mean, you're learning from the horse as well as the horse is learning from you. And I wonder how widespread an approach that is in horse training still.
Well, it really hasn't been over the, you know, centuries, but because of the awareness now of natural horsemanship, it really is becoming more and more a trend. And I've been as far away as Mongolia working with horses and horsemen, and it's still, you know, a lot of the old way of doing things, which was forcing the horse against his will, bullying the horse. It was just not a good thing, but it still goes on all over the world. And this philosophy is helping change that, but it doesn't just change how we train horses. It's had effect on, obviously, dogs. Now there's the dog whisper and all that. And that's just communication is what I call it. It's subtle communication. It's not a magic. It's not a mystery. It's really about, you know, would you rather whisper to your child or your dog or your horse, or would you like to scream at them and whack them and hit them?
Talk about what goes on at Diamond Cross, because people come to you for retreats and seminars, and part of that is you training horses in front of crowds?
Yes, that's primarily what I do, is the demonstration for groups, often corporate groups mainly, but we also do other things like families and special interests like veterans, whatever. But it really is something we've been doing here for the last 25 years on the ranch, and we've had just thousands of people here, everything from corporations. We've had all 50 Supreme Court state justices, congressmen, Federal Reserve. I mean, you name it, we've had leaders from all over the world here. So it's been amazing to us. But Jackson Hole is a place where often corporations come on retreat, so that's how we got into it. I just started using my demonstration primarily as entertainment for people, as an activity. But what we found over, like I said, the last 25 years is the input that leaders have given us about what they get from the horse demonstration is just fits what they're doing, and they play off of that. And some of them have come back year after year. They brought their teams out to work. So we've grown and branched into working with small teams as well in training, having them hands-on working with horses in different ways, everything from catching to leading to brushing to riding them. So it's been a real journey on our part, but I think mostly the thing that we've learned more from the leaders than they've learned from us, I have to say.
It's interesting, and I didn't realize you let them work with the horses as well. It's not just them watching you.
I do. The big groups are pretty much, we just use the demonstration, and then we'll also have discussion, or often the facilitator of the group will, you know, use it as also kind of what they're focusing on and apply it, because there's pretty much something in every demonstration that pertains to leadership. But we do offer, actually, even some for the smaller groups, we offer a trail ride. We get them sometimes involved in working with cattle, cutting cattle, even doing that on foot as a team building exercise. One of the funnest things we've done is turn these people in the corral with a bunch of horses and have them catch their horse. And these are people that mostly have, you know, never caught a horse in their lives. They have no idea. So it's pretty funny But it really gets people out of the box, and it shows kind of how their feel is, how their body language is, because horses read them real clearly. And it's a lot of fun, but it's a great learning experience.
So a horse is like a mirror, you write. How do you figure?
Well, I believe they're a reflection of us because they are an animal that is so sensitive to their environment that they can really feel us. And, you know, for example, if we have anger in us, we're hiding, they're going to get it. They sense that danger. If we're fearful, they sense that. So they just have another level of sensitivity to their environment. So they read not just our body language, but even our vibration, our energy.
So you give them credit for lots of perception, but your own perceptions of them and the things that you need to know to work with them. I mean, obviously you're going to learn a lot just by being around them, but does it help if you know some of their stories, like some of the history of the horse before it comes to you?
Well, it can help, but really the horse will tell you, you know, if he's afraid, there's a reason he's afraid, and if there's a particular place on his body he's afraid, then he probably got a shot in the neck there without being prepared, or he got smacked with a pitchfork or a raft from a shoer that didn't really get the horse ready, or the owner didn't get the horse ready. So a lot of times a horse, you don't have to know where he came from because he will tell you that, you know, whether it's been good or bad. On the other hand, you know, the horse that's been treated right, you can tell. So you don't always have to know. You can tell if a horse has had a good owner that knows what they're doing, or maybe they've spoiled the horse, not just abuse. You know, we get a lot of horses that have just been spoiled. Everybody loves them, but they don't give them any clear boundaries, and some of these horses are the worst to work with. They're the most dangerous. My wife even got hurt, you know, by one of them that was spoiled, ran over the top of her, knocked her down, broke her collarbone.
Ow.
So this is pretty common. So this is what we teach, is clear boundaries, maintaining respect while you're trying to gain trust. And it really fits, it just fits people so much if you really cross over and are willing to take a good look at it.
We are talking to Grant Gallagher here on the Jefferson Exchange about the book Lessons, Think Like a Horse, Lessons in Life, Leadership, and Empathy from an Unconventional Cowboy. It's a conversation you're welcome to join on the Jefferson Exchange. 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. Here's a call from Mark in Merlin. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange.
Oh, good morning. It's great to talk with you. Listen, I grew up as a youngster from the age of about, I must have been even younger than that, but I remember from about 4 until about 10, walking around behind my grandfather, who was a trainer for trotters and pacers at Saratoga in upstate New York.
Mm-hmm.
And I can remember my siblings weren't welcome, but I was welcome because apparently I didn't upset the horses for whatever reason. I don't know what that was. But my grandfather sort of set up, oh, you got the right energy, whatever that was. But anyway, I'm wondering if you have had experience with trotters and pacers, and if the training and the approach to the horses is very much different than it is with quarter horses and thoroughbreds.
Okay, thanks for the question, Mark. Thanks for that.
Yeah, Mark, I've worked with all kinds of different horses. I wouldn't say I've worked with a lot of trotters or pacers. I've worked with fox trotters and Morgans and gated horses, as well as quarter horses and thoroughbreds. And like I said, horses from Mongolia and Argentina. So to me, all horses really have the same instinct. Some, like the Mustangs, are a little more in tune to their environment because they've had to survive lately. But really, the horse's instincts are the same. So I really feel like, just like you said, you had good energy and your grandfather recognized that. You didn't upset the horses. And it's interesting, some people do and some people don't. And I find that not just with people that are experienced with horses, but people that have no experience with horses, one will like be able to bond with a horse and the horse likes them and respects them. And on the other hand, another person that's never been with a horse that horse is terrified of them, or that horse is just immediately feels like they can push them around. So there is a sense that a horse has that, like you said, is a lot more observant than we are, and I think there's so much we can learn from them.
Well, and you've talked about the things that people can learn from watching you with horses, things that you can learn from the horses. I mean, how has this process of mingling, you know, empathy and all the good stuff about human beings and the things they need helped you in your own life?
Oh, it's helped me tremendously. You know, I grew up in a somewhat dysfunctional family. I talk about that in a book. My mother tried to kill herself when she was, you know, when I was a baby, I was sent away. And, you know, so I think a lot of us, and, you know, I like to mention names, but a lot of us who have had success doing clinics and things like I do have had trauma in their own life. So they really relate to the trauma in a horse. And there's just something that happens when you can help a horse get over its fear and its trauma that helps you. And so it's just an incredible therapy, really, that we're getting. But it seems to help everybody that's around it very much and begins to capture it. I've seen this over the years. You know, I've been at this a lot of years, and I've just seen how people change when they're around this. The people that are too soft with their kids really begin to firm up and realize how important it is not to spoil a horse, how important it is not to spoil a child, how you don't let a tantrum work with a horse, you don't let a tantrum work for a child. So this is, you know, really one of my passions, is to help us get a better balance of parenting, because people are so afraid to discipline because they're afraid of abuse that they won't discipline. Well, a lack of discipline is a form of abuse, too, clearly with a horse. So I believe it is clearly, for example, with a child.
To that point of the creature in tantrum, and it could be child or horse, but I'm going to focus on a horse here. The way that you talk about a horse softening, and you realize that they're relaxing a bit around you. This is obviously the opposite of that. So when they're in a tantrum, how do you get them to come back to a position where they're open to take your guidance?
Well, a horse in a tantrum is, you know, angry, he's fighting you, it's for a reason. But, you know, to me, a tantrum is anger, and that's because he's been spoiled. And so you do have to discipline, but this is the philosophy we stick with, and I believe it just fits people, employees, whatever. You be as soft as you can be and as firm as you need to be. This was a Ray Hunt saying.
Mm-hmm.
Be as soft as you can, but as firm as you need to be. And Tom Dorn say it may take all you got, because some of those people just would not discipline, and he had to get them to. And it was not a kinder man probably on the planet as far as, you know, human beings to animals. But Tom believed in discipline. It was just his way of getting it. Was never abused, but he would make it difficult for the horse to do the wrong thing. And then when the horse chose to do the right thing, he really honored that try. So he would say, honor the slightest try and the smallest change. And, you know, reward that horse by releasing pressure. And it's really so much with us. It's the same way. You know, we bristle up when we need to discipline, but as soon as there's just a beginning of a change, then you're rewarded. And with a human, you might, you know, it might be just to say good or good job or that's it, well done or whatever. But you have both sides. It's a balance of discipline and reward.
It's really interesting. The slightest try and the smallest change. I wrote that down. I want to remember that. So what kinds of tools? You know, you don't break the horses. You don't bring obviously tools of injury into the ring with you. What do you have in your hands, if anything?
Well, one of our favorite tools is a flag, and it's just a little whip. The Ray Hunt used to use a antenna off of a pickup, an old one. With a flag on it. I believe that's what he used. But it really is something that the horse learns to respect but is not afraid of. And by nature, a horse is afraid of something like that. So You use what they're afraid of, really, to discipline them. But you don't have to hit them or anything. You just kind of swish it at them. And then as soon as they are willing to move away from it, to them, that's discipline. And this all comes from how they treat each other in the herd. The main, you know, dominant horse will back its ears and kind of give body language like it's going to bite that horse, and that horse will move off. So that's, it's kind of, or a swishing of the tail, so mm-hmm. to speak, would be a little bit like this flag. So if the horse doesn't honor the flag, then obviously he's going to get a little smack on the behind, okay? But any horse that's never become dull, he will honor that swish, and you won't have to give him a spank.
We have an email here from, I'm not quite sure how to pronounce this, Zwag and Talent, who asks, do horses who have been naturally trained wear bridles or halters?
No, I'm going to step inside my barn because it's hailing.
Oh, wow. Wow, you've had all kinds of weather occurring during this interview.
Yeah, we're just getting marble-sized hail here.
Oh, wow.
You better put your flowers in. I hope that's better.
Okay, yeah, it's fine.
Okay, great. Oh, okay, can you give me that question again?
Zwag wanted to know if horses who have been naturally trained wear bridles or halters.
Well, yeah, we use halters and bridles. Mm-hmm. We do. I think a tool can be used for good or it can be used for abuse. I'm not against any of that. I'm not against bridles. I do not think that you have to cause pain to a horse. I don't even use a twisted wire snaffle anymore like I used to, and a lot of people still do. I don't think you need that. But I don't criticize those that do it as much as who's hands are working that tool. And even a flag or a rope, anything can be abusive. And some people even use this whole philosophy and are abusive with it by running the horse round and round in a corral and not really respecting when that horse is trying to make a change. They don't see it, so they don't honor that try. So they're just, in a way, they're abusing the horse in this way, too. So it really is being able to understand how horses think and be able to feel what they're feeling and recognize it. It's not just a method of chasing a horse around.
And you mentioned in the book that the horse will give you some indication. There's usually a clue that you can spot if you've been around a horse for a little while about what it is considering doing next.
Yeah, and part of this is really learning to be observant about body language. You watch their eyes, you watch their ears, their mouth, their tail, and, you know, the tenseness in their body. So you can see when they're afraid. But when the horse begins to make a change that you're looking for, you need to immediately recognize that and release the pressure and reward that horse for the little things. And if you reward the little things, the big things take care of themselves. But if you don't acknowledge that, then the horse gets offended. He realizes you don't understand and you don't speak his language. So then he gets offended and he just gets on the fight. And it's like a lot of people that are that way, too. I think it's so important that we can criticize, but when we don't see, when a horse or person is trying to make a change and honor that and reward that, then we're just, you know, being that person that says, it doesn't matter what I do, it's never good enough.
All right, so it is important, you're saying, to do this with people, too, that if they give you the slightest try or the smallest change, and if they're trying to get with the program, you reward them for that effort.
Absolutely you do. Absolutely you do. And that, I think that's the most important, is how we feel, you know, when we do the right thing or we're even trying to do the right thing. We've all had probably bosses that, you know, or tell you something to do when you're already doing it or you're already thinking about doing it or you're ready to do it, and how dishonoring that can be when you know, you're trying to take responsibility, they're micromanaging you, and they're not really honoring you. So it's just having a little higher level of sensitivity to what's going on with whatever or whoever you're working with.
You've been talking about Ray Hunt, one of your one of the people who trained you in the training methods you use, Tom Doran as well. I want to bring in another name here, Tinka Lordy, another of your trainers, said that not all horses are worth the trouble. Do you subscribe to that? Are there some horses you've had to give up on?
Yeah, I've had a few. Of course, I was always determined to prove that this philosophy works, you know, on every horse, not just some. And I would just go to the very end with them. But I really never found a horse that it didn't work on, but I have had a few that they just didn't retain. And some of that was because the trauma was so bad that it just would take, you know, a lifetime of working with that horse. And you, sometimes you just have to draw the line, because you can work with 10 healthier horses while you're trying to fix one very traumatized horse. But really, the only horses that I have not had success with were ones that had physical ailments, particularly a mare that had just severe hormonal problems. And another one was a stallion I worked with that it would work every time, but he just had no retention. And he had had a brain injury, and he just kind of never could make it. So I've learned over the years to look for the physical problem and not just the mental. It's not always a training problem. Sometimes it's, you need a veterinarian, and then sometimes it's just something you can't deal with. So you have to pick your, I always say, pick your battles. You know, you can get the project that will sink your ship if you're not careful, because you can only spend your time, you know, the best you can.
Let's take a phone call in here from Betsy in Ashland. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Grant Gallagher, the author of Think Like a Horse.
Hi, thank you.
Sure.
I have a lot of questions, but I'll just ask one, which is, what have you seen over the years as far as a growing trend towards more humane treatment of horses? And I'm specifically thinking of, one, the wild horses. I know they're very much at risk here in Oregon and around the country and in Canada. And also in wealthy communities where they breed horses, very high-end horses, I just became aware that, you know, stallions never are even allowed to mount mares. They're, you know, ejaculate on a mounting thingy, you know, separately.
An apparatus, yeah. They
don't have any connection with other horses. It's really sad. So just wanting to hear what you're seeing.
All right. Thanks for the question, Betsy. Appreciate that.
Well, those are great questions. And some of them are very difficult, very controversial, obviously. I worked with the Mustangs, and, you know, I have my feelings about them. I think we could manage that better. I'm not sure the government does a good job with that. You know, they're just doing the best they can. I've seen a lot of trauma. I've worked with those kind of horses, the wild horses, and the way they're handled. You know, I hate to, you know, get after somebody, but this is what happened in my experience, is those horses are so traumatized, and then they're adopted out to the public that most of them don't know what they're doing anyway. So those horses are on the fight, and they're angry, and I had a chance to work with a lot of those horses and before they were, you know, vaccinated, ran into a chute, and branded, and all that. So it made all the difference in the world. But as far as the trending goes, I think this whole natural horsemanship and what's coming about, it's really made a difference. I think people are really realizing the difference, what is abuse and what isn't, what is natural and what isn't. And you know, I think we're gaining in that department, but I'm careful not to just attack tradition either. So there's a lot of good traditions out there, and we can only gain, you know, as so much so fast.
Let's take another call here from Jerry and Riddle. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Grant Gallagher.
Hi. I just had a quick question. I was wondering what advice you would have for working with horses that have been abused or neglected just how to approach them. I have very little experience, but I have volunteered a few times in the past with horses. I'm highly sensitive. So just, yeah, being inexperienced, I'm just looking for a little advice.
All right. Thanks for that, Jerry.
Mm. Oh, great, Jerry. Yeah, the key to this philosophy of training is giving the horse the freedom to what we say move its feet. It's just it's a term we use. Don't be afraid to move your feet. And you never trap the horse. You never force it to get over something that it's afraid of, which it could have been an abuser. So if it's afraid of, for example, a man or a pitchfork or anything, then you would simulate that, and you would approach the horse, and then you'd say, go ahead and get away from this. And you'd encourage him to run away from it, and you never trap him. And then as soon as he takes a look at it, you actually show him that what he was afraid of is afraid of him. It might be a tarp or something, like the great thing to use. And you shake the tarp at him until they run away from it. And then when they stop and take a look at it, and instead of approaching them, you take the tarp away, drop it on the ground, and they'll come up and sniff it and put their foot on it and begin to dominate what they're afraid of. And so they really learn that to face their fear and stop running from it, and that it's really no different than, you know, dealing with your issues. This is really psychology.
Huh. Really confronting what you fear. That's pretty amazing. There's a fair amount of poetry in your description about horses, and in fact, there is some cowboy poetry in the book as well, but like your description of Freckles, and running up against an upstart younger horse and how Freckles would, you know, kind of flick an ear to indicate, okay, this is how I'm feeling. And then when that isn't noticed, swish the tail to indicate, yeah, I'm really kind of getting annoyed with you. But you point out, too, that you do also see other people who can be having emotional reactions to things going on around them. You're not a therapist, as you point out, but do you sometimes ask people, hey, what's bothering you?
Yeah, you get, you know, when you get observant with horses, you tend to get more observant with people. You start to have, you know, it's not just a verbal communication. You start to watch their body language, which is really emotional intelligence. And since we've been doing this, we've been exposed to a lot of people that actually study and teach emotional intelligence. And we as humans have our own way of communicating that is nonverbal. So that's really what the horse is helping us learn and be more observant. You know, just like I said, watch the eye. The eyes will tell you so much, the body language. And so we call that feel. And when you learn to have better feel with a horse, pretty soon you have a better feel as a human. You have better feel as a boss or as a salesperson, particularly we've noticed. You know, when to give a little pressure and when to see that you have that person or animal coming your way, then you release that pressure, reward them, rather than keep trying to force it onto them. So it's the little things that really make the big differences.
You had talked before about making sure that it's clear to, well, to animals, to children, et cetera, that there are boundaries. And so you talk about how to set a boundary when training a horse. How careful a process should that be? Because horses, as you point out, are rather large animals and capable of doing some damage to us.
Well, they are. And they, you know, they have boundaries within their herd. And that's what we observe and have noticed so much and also have been taught. That horses have their own boundaries. They have their own space, and they want to be respected. And, you know, Ray used to say, treat them like you'd like to be treated. So he would say, you just don't let a horse come barging into your space. You put a bubble around you and say, you can come in if you ask, but you can't just come smashing into my boundary because they're a big animal, and they'll knock you down and hurt you. And so you have to establish some clear boundaries. And everything about training horses is really teaching boundaries. You teach them to stay between your hands and your legs when you ride them, the reins. So I use a little boundary lesson in the round pen with a rope on the ground that really shows really people how important and how quickly a horse will learn clear boundaries if you are consistent with those boundaries.
Well, and there's a great example of that in the book where you were working with a mare, Velvet, and you put the rope down and use the audience to help the process.
Yeah, it's part of my. It's really part of my demonstration. I put a rope across the front portion of the corral. The audience is in front of them. And of course, the horse is afraid of the audience. It wants to be at the opposite end. It wants to be out the gate that it came in, maybe where the other horses are. So right off the bat, we establish a clear boundary, but it's just a rope on the ground. I have the audience clap and hoop and holler when the horse is on the opposite side where it wants to be. It's pacing back and forth, trying to get out. It's afraid. It wants out of there. But when this noise, which just is a pressure that we want the horse to eventually get used to anyway, that horses are afraid of loud noise, so it begins to search, and it finally crosses the rope in front of the crowd. I have the people be quiet when all 4 feet are on their side of the rope, and that horse, it's amazing how quickly that horse will learn to stay on that side of the rope. So actually they're drawing that horse to themselves by creating the pressure and rewarding the slightest try, the smallest change, and being clear about their boundaries.
We have an email here from Nellie No Town Given, who tells a little story. 17 years ago, we adopted a donkey from a rescue group to be a guard animal for our sheep and goats. He had clearly been abused because he hated people, especially men. Instead of guarding the sheep and goats, he tried to attack them. I absolutely agree with your understanding of the importance of empathy and identifying with other animals. Because he was highly frightened and anxious, we just backed off and let him relax and get used to his environment. He had a large pasture. For months, we just provided him with food and water. Eventually, he realized we would not hurt him, which really progressed over several years. He now loves when visitors come up and runs up to see them. I really feel happy to have helped him and all the rescued animals we've taken in. I like most animals more than people. They are real. Thanks for your lessons, says Nellie.
Oh, that's really great, Nellie. Good job. And that's exactly what works. It takes patience, takes empathy, understanding. But you have to realize that you can't force that animal to like you. You provide for it. You're good to it. You don't hurt it. And eventually they will begin to believe that you're not going to hurt them. But you still have to prove that somehow. And those that have been hurt like humans, they lack that trust because they're just, you know, it's happened to them already. So it takes a long time sometimes to get that confidence back, and again, some of them don't get it back completely. I've just discovered that there are triggers that bring that out. If you move too quickly or you do something that reminds that animal of that abuse, then they respond, but then you just have to reassure them that you're not the abuser, you're not going to hurt them, and they will gain confidence over time.
Well, I mean, that is the major point I think you'd want to walk away with here. And we're almost done. The idea that we're all works in progress. You're never quite finished. Nobody's ever completely trained, are they?
Well, certainly in the human animal, no. I think horses, you can, if they're started right and have a good foundation and get enough quality training, eventually you get what we call a finished horse. That they can always learn something new. And I think that keeps them interested like we are. But as far as the human animal, I don't think we ever start growing until the day we die. And unfortunately, we get older and we almost feel like we come to a point where we almost are going the other way sometimes.
Yeah.
But, you know, if we're not learning, I have a little phrase when I'm teaching my students riding their fearful horse. I say, when they're turning, they're learning. And you just keep them turning one day and then the other, and they're softening and they're moving their feet and they feel the freedom, and they really learn that you are directing them, you know, away from what they're afraid of, but then back to help them face it and then get away, face it and then get away, so they become more confident. So it's when you're turning, you're learning.
Uh-huh.
And when you're moving your feet, that's how you overcome. And Ray Hunt used to say, if you want a horse that won't move, get a sawhorse.
Right. Think Like a Horse by Grant Gallagher. Grant, thank you so much.